And before we get started, Atlanta is a show with a lot of frank language. You'll hear some frank language in this segment. If any of you are not prepared for that, based on circumstances where you're listening, maybe wait and listen a little bit later. Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Actor, rapper, comedian, and writer Donald Glover created the comedy series Atlanta. He also stars as Earn, an aspiring music manager who wants to take his rapper cousin Al, also known as Paperboy, to stardom. The show's first season won a bunch of awards, including 2 Emmys for Glover's acting and directing.
Now in its second season, Atlanta remains a loose collection of stories about Earn, his friends, his daughter's mother, Vanessa, and the way they all try to stay afloat. Paperboy now has some success and some money, but there's never enough. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We've got some of our favorite people with us to catch up on FX's Atlanta on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from The Good Fight on CBS All Access. In season 2, the staff of the law firm find themselves under psychological assault when a client at another firm kills his lawyer for overcharging. If you haven't seen season 1 of The Good Fight, catch up on this critically acclaimed show now, and then tune in to season 2, premiering exclusively on CBS All Access. Visit cbs.com/happyhour to find out more and get a free trial.
You've already met me and Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. With us this week is Gene Demby from NPR's Code Switch. Hey, Gene.
What's good? How are you?
I am good and all the way from NPR West in Culver City, California, the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute and deserter of those of us here in D.C.
Right. Traitor.
Sam Sanders. Hi, Sam.
Hey, guys. Can I tell you a secret?
You can.
Right now in Culver City, California, it is sunny and 65
I
degrees.
Knew you were
gonna
be
That's fine. So we're going to talk about Atlanta. Sam, so you talked to both Lakeith Stanfield and Brian Tyree Henry for It's Been a Minute. Brian Tyree Henry plays Al, Paperboy, and Lakeith Stanfield plays Darius, who is kind of their buddy.
Yeah, they were both delightful.
And I was really listening to the Brian Tyree Henry one this morning. That is quite a conversation. You guys kind of, I don't know, I felt like you were becoming pals.
Mm-hmm. It totally was. So what we didn't put in the final cut that you guys couldn't hear, we spent the first 10 minutes talking about how both of us kind of have a love-hate relationship with HGTV. And we ended
wow.
up coming up with our own idea for a show, like me and him, and we would call it Property Brothers.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'm in.
That's amazing.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, Gene, tell me where, when I told you that I was watching the new Atlanta screeners, you were very like, I'm excited to see it. Tell me how it is. What is your relationship with Atlanta like?
I mean, I dug it last season. I thought it was strange, right? He's an idiosyncratic guy with a particular vision. But this season seems to be... It was weird. There was a way in which I had some, like, distance from it. I felt like it was a way I couldn't, like, love it in the same way. I thought it was dope, but I didn't, like, love it the way the other people loved it. This season seems to be, like, it seems, like, really coherent. And also, every time you're watching it, you're like, where's this going? Like, yeah. there's takes these wild left turns. And you're like, what is happening? Sam, you spent more time in the South than I have. I have no idea if Atlanta's really like that. But there's something about the specific location that they inhabit. Like, they're, like, broke. And then, like, they're also flitting between these two worlds where, like, they might just be around a bunch of rich people, right? There's an episode, the third episode of the season, which we've all seen, in which Earn comes into a little money. And, like, it's, the whole episode is about, like, how hard it is for him to, like, both spend his money and then hold on to his money.
Yeah.
It was, like, hilarious, but also, like, that is a really specific universe of instability, right?
You know?
Like, it seems like they could be rich tomorrow or they could be, like, homeless tomorrow, you know?
Yeah. And I think so much of what gets to that ability to go from big to small to high to low and this to that so quickly is the way that they make the city of Atlanta and the Atlanta metro area a character in the show itself. And when you have that and you're able to move across a space as big as Atlanta, you can actually move within different worlds very quickly in a car, right? And so I think a lot of what they're able to do with how the show can seem to be all over the map is that, like, they are all over the map of the Atlanta metro area. And so it's a show informed so much more by place, I think, than other shows. And it's also a show that is fully aware at all times of almost the collective consciousness of Black Atlanta. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to me. And it happens because they respect the city itself as an integral part of the show, I think.
Yeah.
There's something else. This is probably the coolest show on television, not just in terms of hip, but in terms of tone and temperament. There is a deadpan kind of world building that's going on. And don't mistake it. It is world building, but it's just done. The I don't want to say flatness of tone, but the loss of affect, the affectless tone, means that you can create a very grounded world that can go, that reality can still go feathery at the edges. We can get an invisible car. We can get a black Justin Bieber. And you just go, yep. Mm-hmm. Because it's, it's all asserted. And that's why it feels like an anthology series more so than ever. And what's uniting it is, you know, these three characters. But really the tone, the way that the humor is never lunged at. This is the least sweaty comedy you're going to see.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the fact that, just like you guys were saying, because of their precariousness, their financial situation, we can go from comedy to tragedy on a dime. Mm-hmm. And it still feels like it's all part of the same show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and there's that meeting in the second episode where they're trying to get the song to play at this kind of Spotify-esque streaming service, and they can't do it, and that feels familiar, let's put it that way. But there's also a scene in the third episode where the character of Tracy, who I think is a great addition to the cast, played by Chris Davis, is going for an interview. Mm-hmm. And we all know he's not going to get the job. That's part of the humor. But when he doesn't get the job, he explodes. And the smart thing, the tragic thing, the heartbreaking part is not his explosion, but that the white dude sitting across the desk is not surprised by it, right. Fully expected it. Mm-hmm. I went back and watched that scene several times just to see what that's saying about their situation, about how it's all, their lives are circumscribed by forces that they cannot control. It's funny and heartbreaking at the same time.
Yeah. The other thing I like about it is that their financial situation, it's not kind of one-dimensional. It's not just a matter of broke versus rich. It's the thing Gene was talking about where, like, the money that they have, one of the great lessons of the way that they deal with money when they have it is that not all money is the same. Like, a dollar that is held by one person does not operate the same way as a dollar that's held by another person. And that's an incredibly, I mean, it's rare enough to see television engage with people who are genuinely, like, poor or broke, right?
Yeah.
But it's even more rare for them to get into kind of the things that people go through to try to make money out of no money and the ways in which money is different depending on whether you already have some. In the first season, there's this wonderful story where, you know, Earn is trying to get some money and there's an opportunity to get it, but it will take a long time. And he has to give this explanation that's essentially, money is not all the same to me. I'm not actually better off giving up all my money now for four times as much money in 6 months.
Right.
I don't need it in 6 months. I need it now because I need to eat. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that a lot of people don't even know people do or have to do to get money and to kind of have things. And I very much admire that about the show.
And like you look at Paperboy's character, like it's hard to tell like sometimes if he's like ambivalent about, like, I mean, like it's like he could have, you know, like literally gotten on the table and danced. There's like this, like the worst Tiny Desk concert ever, which he has to, where they're at that Spotify place, and he basically say like, you know, get up there and perform, and it's like all these people in their cubicles sitting right there.
Where my real niggas at? Put your hands up. Man, yeah. Hey, paper.
It's so funny, but he's in this office.
Yeah.
And he clearly has to win them over, right? And he just, like, is not interested in doing it. And on one hand, you're like, oh, okay, this dude has, like, all this artistic integrity. And on the other hand, you're like, yo, what are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Just do the thing so you can, you're broke right now. And this is a way in which you cannot be broke.
You know, it's funny. So, one, thinking about the way the show deals with money, frankly, is that a lot of white shows don't do it, and almost all black shows have to. Even think about a show like Black-ish. They talk about what it's like to be new money, you know? Like, they talk about what it's like to spend all that you make. Compare that to Modern Family, where they all just happen to be rich off of the closet business. Come on. You know? In thinking of the way that Atlanta relates to money, two things stand out as very Black to me. Like, whenever they come into money, it's never just their own.
Mm-hmm.
They got to deal with responsibilities and the family, kids, pressure, whatever. Like, it's never like you just get money and it's just a gift. Once you get it, it needs to solve some kind of problem.
Right, because they're in arrears before then, right?
Like, exactly.
Like, once you come into it.
Which is like so much a Black experience, because it's like you go find any up-and-coming young Black professional. Chances are they still got to send money home every month.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this season is also talking about a really interesting idea around success, particularly with Paperboy. And this is something I have to credit Alan Sepinwall, who has done some writing about this too. But there's a lot of material in the show about how he's at this very awkward level of success where it's sort of the worst of all possible worlds because, you know, I don't think you're fully dealing with this show if you don't acknowledge that it has a lot of weed in it. And yeah. One of the things, for example, that Paperboy is learning is that he's not famous enough that someone else is going to go procure weed for him.
Mm-hmm.
However, he is famous enough that if he tries to procure it for himself, someone wants to take his picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's at this terrible, and I think that thwarted performance at the streaming service is a similar idea where he's doing well enough that he has this opportunity, but he's not famous enough that the people there really care or get excited.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's a very social media enabled kind of recognition where he's had this one big song that everybody knows, that everybody saw the video, but are you making money?
And are you big enough?
And are you big enough? And what do you parlay that into? And that's one of the reasons why Earn wanting to be a manager plays into it so much, is that he's trying to be the one helping Al to parlay this into something, but he doesn't know what he's doing.
He doesn't know.
Right,
absolutely.
Right?
So it's like you're saying that Paperboy is public radio famous. Just famous enough for it to be annoying.
Well, it's true, and I think they do a really good job of situating these guys in a place that's not, I think a lot of times if a show is about an artistic person, they're either a striving nobody with integrity or they're a huge success. And they don't acknowledge this like massive middle ground. And I suspect that Donald Glover, being himself a rapper and somebody who's been around the music business, is, you know, and somebody who I was reminded this weekend did a ton of like YouTube comedy and stuff like that prior to what he does now, kind of understands about those spaces.
Yeah. Well, and it's so interesting that like middle ground that Paperboy finds himself in, it inherently leads itself to ambivalence because you don't know how to feel about that kind of space. But it also can easily veer into nihilism, which I just think is like the big through line of the entire show. And like the whole thing is that at their core, a lot of them just doesn't care and expects for things not to get better anyway. And so this show has been compared a lot to something like Seinfeld, like a show about nothing. But this is more, because when you pair a show where the characters never really gain ground, but also with a dose of nihilism and like issues of race and class, like it ends up with this dark underbelly in spite of the comedy. And it's like if you look back over any of those scenes that you first laughed at, you could watch them under a second viewing and find it saddening, because like they're really getting at the way that it's hard for Black men like these characters to make ways for themselves.
Yeah. And also, like another difference between this and like Seinfeld is just like their proximity to violence. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's a way. I mean, in the first episode, the last third of the episode goes into this in this completely crazy direction that, and I don't know if it'll pay off later in the season or if that was just a really like, frankly, terrifying aside, it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It goes down this, there's a bunch of shooting that happens unrelated to the central characters. And at the same time, in the third episode, you know, they leave a strip club and a very famous athlete who's a millionaire several times over just pops up and is just racing people on the street.
I don't want to get out of this without talking about Vanessa, who is the mother of Earn's little daughter. Because I think she is such an important and good character. They are not married. There's this whole question of, like, are they together? And like, well, And I can't remember who it was, but there was somebody on Twitter who was talking about this being so true to a lot of relationships that they had in their family. Absolutely. That were like, there's always some aunt who's got this guy who he's around, he's not around, and they have a kid together or multiple kids together, and he's around, and they love each other, and sometimes they're sleeping together, and sometimes they're not.
Yep.
And I think they do a very good job of explaining both the frustrations but also the love in that relationship. That
And the implication is that she's like a little bit better off than he is, right? Or she's like more educated than she is. He is, right? Is that
he dropped out of Princeton, so he's like an educated guy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that she's doing a little bit better than Earn is the right takeaway from her character.
Mm-hmm. And in many ways, she's kind of the in to his character, because for the first season, at least, he was kind of a cipher. He doesn't say much. He's not effusive. So everybody around him is really interesting, but he is kind of this absence in the middle of the middle of the show. Until I think that changes in the very first episode of this season when he's talking with his Uncle Willie, and his Uncle Willie is challenging him, and he pushes back. And when he pushes back, he's actually talking about himself.
What I'm scared of is being you. You know, someone everybody knew was smart, but ended up being a know-it-all fuck-up Jay that just let shit happen to him.
There's the essence of that character right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That fear, that sense of this could all go completely wrong, that I'm not cut out for what I'm engaged upon, that is a universal fear.
Yeah.
It's also a fear that makes it not Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
I think that fear is so pronounced.
Right.
For black men of a certain age, where you know you've got potential, you know you're smart, but you so easily see these examples of where, like, the world cut down someone else just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I also think the show is really brave to posit from the outset that maybe Earn is not inherently special.
Yeah, that's...
You're not expected to believe that he's especially brilliant or an especially good person or an especially loving, generous, magical guy.
It's not hard to imagine this show, like, where Earn, like, in a, like 15 years ago, or even, like, 5 years ago, where Earn is, like, the sort of, like, sensible friend who's trying to, like, slap his crazy friends in the shape. And you get the... Throughout the first three episodes of the season, it's sort of suggested that, like, that Paperboy would be better off finding another manager, right? Mm-hmm. That Earn is actually just not good at this thing that he's insinuated himself into, right? He's just like, I'm going to be your manager. And that, like, Paperboy's career might be further along, right? I mean, even the scene at the Spotify place, right, when Heather... when it was like when he pulls out the CD and they're like, we don't have disc drives.
Yes.
It was like, oh, like it was like, come on, man. like, and he doesn't, I mean, the thing is, like, he's not filled with a ton of self-regard either. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if, like, Earn is depressed. Like, I mean, like, that's part
absolutely.
Of the thing that's happening there.
For
right?
sure.
I think that's absolutely
They all are a little bit, it feels
right?
like.
Yeah, but I think that's absolutely part of the question that the show kind of generally raises. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, while you're thinking about that, those bigger questions of who he is, you get all those small moments in which he's trying so hard in an individual situation. I go back over and over again to the episode in the first season when he took Vanessa out to dinner.
Yeah. Oh my God, yes.
And he has no money and he's trying to figure out how to make this dinner work with no money.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene with the server where he's basically saying, like, you have been killing me all night.
Yeah.
The server's trying to upsell him. And you realize, like, that's a very real thing. Like, if you didn't have a lot of money and you went out with somebody and you didn't want them to know you had a lot of, that you didn't have a lot of money, do you really want the server to be sitting there trying to be like, oh, how about also an appetizer? Yeah. How about also another bottle of wine? You feel like you're killing me.
I also love how that scene, which was brilliant, it underscores, like, how much, like, they're still just kids. Like, they're not fully grown yet. Because any grown-ass man that knew he was that broke would say, baby, I'm sorry, I'm going to cook for you tonight. And so much of the situations that these three find themselves in is also just kids being kids, too. If that's probably the wrong way to say it, but, like, they won't be living this kind of life 10 years from now.
Hopefully.
These characters won't, you know?
Yeah, but you can also, you can believe they could be.
They could,
and that's what I think. You can also imagine him, like, 15 years from now.
Still being effed up.
Still being, like, basically the same guy, but now maybe he's, like, the uncle who's hanging around.
Yeah.
But he hasn't made any of those things happen.
It's so funny to break down the character that Donald Glover plays in the show because it is so distinctly removed from who he is as, like, a working person in the industry. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys read the profile of him in The New Yorker, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. He's always working.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he believes he is the best. There's one line in the article where he says, quote, "I feel like Jesus. I do feel chosen." Mm-hmm. What in the world, dude?
I love the fact that shortly before he entered this, like, incredibly rich period of his life where he's making Atlanta and doing all this music and stuff, there was this story that circulated because he had written a bunch of notes that he posted to his Instagram on, like, this hotel, like a hotel notepad. Mm-hmm. And they talked about anxieties and all this other stuff. And people were kind of saying, like, oh, is he okay? Is he okay? And then he went into this really rich creative period, and it's like it can be so hard to tell the difference between mm-hmm. somebody is not okay and somebody is right on the verge of this incredibly kind of generous artistic.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's an evolution, really, because, I mean, if you go back and look at his early Derek comedy stuff or Troy Barnes on Community, mm-hmm, he was not known for making small choices. Mm-hmm. He was big.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's created this character who is all internal, mm-hmm, and represents the self-doubt that, at least if you read the profiles, he's moved past.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also love that he's really candid about owning the fact that, like, you're in different emotional places in different parts of your career. I think there were earlier parts of his career where 30 Rock Community, you saw this, like, happy side of Donald. He was a happy guy.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, I'm not that happy anymore.
Yeah.
And my art shall reflect that. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
I was wondering how much of that is, like, I'm serious now. Yeah. Like, I'm a serious, creative person.
You know, from reading that profile of him in The New Yorker, I think he has just gotten to a very different understanding of, like, race in Hollywood, and he feels a bit jaded as a black man having to work in these white fields. And at first it's fun because you're proving you can do it, but then you find it tiresome, and I think he's there right now.
It feels like it's gotten blacker too as he's become more famous, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
like, I just feel like there's ways in which, like,
he was in an improv comedy troupe, so
and it was like, well, it was like an NYU, and he was only, I think, he was the only black person in the troupe, and it was like, you know, Community, I mean, there's, you know, that a lot, granted, a lot of stuff is out of his control, like, he didn't cast Community, right? But, like, there's a way in which, as he's become paradoxically, like, more famous and, like, more, I think, pointedly, like, black in his expressions, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and there's also this thing. It's like, so I talked to Lakeith Stanfield, talked to Brian Tyree Henry, talked to other, every black actor or director or producer that I talked to on the show, they are part of this, like, secret black underground railroad of Hollywood. For whatever reason, the moment that we're in with, like, prestige black TV and film, they all are talking to each other.
I don't doubt it. It's like them and Jordan Peele and Issa Rae, like, going to brunch.
Like, I'm serious. Yeah. They just, like, meet up and are like, how are we going to do this? How are we taking over today?
Yep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, I definitely want to hear what all of you think about Atlanta. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Gene at GEEDEE215 and Sam, of course, out there in LA at Sam Sanders. Thanks to both of you guys for joining me and Glenn.
Thank you.
It's always such a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of you for listening. We will be back here on Friday. And if you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. See you Friday.
Hey, thanks for listening, and I want to make sure you know about Up First. You can start your day with it tomorrow. Up First is the morning news podcast from NPR. When news moves fast, Up First is the quick morning update on what happened and what you need to start the day. Wake up with Up First tomorrow morning on the NPR One app and also wherever you listen to podcasts.